Hi, Dave Emery here. This is Side 1, for the record, program number 774, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 14, The Corporate Connections and the Public versus Private Dynamic. This is being recorded on February 16th of the year 2014. Hi there, boys and girls. It's time once again for another exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie isn't like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. Well, we are going to be continuing with our massive and ongoing analysis of what I call Snowden's Ride, or L'Affaire Snowden, the intelligence operation for which Edward Snowden is fronting and for which he is the public focal point. Snowden and the inextricably linked WikiLeaks operation are an intelligence operation, a spook operation, and when one does what Dorothy and her fellow travelers did in the Wizard of Oz movie, when they take a look at the man behind the curtain, one sees something very, very different. Not only are you looking at people who don't care about people's civil liberties, who don't care about the Bill of Rights or the Constitution or anything else, they quite literally believe in slavery, past, present, and future. I've noted many times, and will note again quickly, what Adolf Hitler noted in Mein Kampf, his autobiography and political manifesto. Hitler wrote, quote, "Most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations would long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept a thing as true. All good liars know this, therefore, and stop at nothing to achieve this end." What we're looking at with the man I call the Peach Fuzz Fascist, Eddie the Friendly Spook, and Glenn Greenwald, Citizen Greenwald, as I call him, Snowden's leaker of choice, who in a previous professional incarnation was a fellow traveler of various Nazi groups for whom he did pro bono legal work and basically ran interference for a bunch of legal interference for a bunch of Nazi murderers. What we're looking at is a complete reversal of facts. In the other episodes, as is the case with every For the Record program, each article is turned into a long, each program, I should say, is turned into a long article-length description, and I have already written the equivalent of a small book about L'Affaire Snowden, and I would encourage listeners who simply hear the program to go to the SpitfireList.com website and stretch out with the documentation, because it is there. One of the things that came out after President Obama digested the recommendations of a panel that had been coming up with recommendations about what to do with the NSA, and I want to note in passing that before I get to the Obama recommendations, the Snowden information basically is in three different categories. The information that people are getting all bent out of shape about has basically been on the public record for quite some time. I've been talking about it intermittently since the 1990s and have spoken about this from public sources, from open sources, for quite some time. There also was a lot of information which could be reasonably extrapolated. Quote, the disclosure, unquote, that NSA is spying on, say, the EU and the United Nations and the world leaders should come as no surprise. That's what intelligence agencies do, and every other major intelligence agency on Earth, as well as the minor ones, are doing exactly the same thing. I would also note that what the NSA is being scored for, what people are, quote, outraged, unquote, about, is also literally standard operating procedure for every major intelligence agency on Earth. I went into that at great length and in great detail in For the Record program number 765, Shearing the Piglet. Then there is information which has no possible application to civil liberties or freedom or anything else, information about the military capabilities of other countries, information about U.S. and British intelligence officers, information about the technical operations of NSA and also the British GCHQ. That falls into the category of hostile counterintelligence. I noted in For the Record program 753, that was my introduction to the Eddie the Friendly Spook series, that not only has a lot of this been on the public record, but frankly, people are completely, I mean, really fundamentally missing the boat on what is in play here. The intrusion into people's privacy is actually, the real intrusion comes from private corporations themselves, not only the internet companies, but various retail outlets, the linked cell phone companies, and I frankly don't have a lot of pity for those who lament this, because frankly, as I noted in For the Record 753, not only does this technology, the internet in particular, come from the military and the intelligence community in the first place, but people have signed off on this with tremendous and ongoing enthusiasm. People are queued up around the block to pick up the next edition of the Wank Phone 5 with a special app that will enable you to tickle your A-blank-blank on the way to work or whatever. People have absolutely gone wacko for this stuff. And I noted about 3.5 years ago in For the Record program number 718 in your Facebook, A Virtual Panopticon, that these technologies and these applications that people think are so liberating are in many ways quite the opposite. The subtitle of For the Record 718, In Your Facebook, A Virtual Panopticon, refers to a type of prison that was envisioned by social philosopher Jeremy Bentham centuries ago, called a panopticon. You can look it up on the internet. It is a type of prison in which the imprisoned can be viewed at all times by his or her jailers, and yet the prisoner cannot see his or her jailers at all. And I noted that Facebook, which everybody thinks is so great, in many ways could be viewed as a virtual panopticon. It's sort of like the online equivalent of a mosh pit at a punk rock event. You know, everybody, whoop, let's all jump in here, wee. And again, I just don't feel a lot of pity for people going, oh my goodness, my privacy has been violated, because people have absolutely embraced this and they just can't get enough of it. What has gone overlooked by most observers and what we are going to be looking at length and in detail is what these major corporations are doing. And again, when President Obama digested the recommendations that came out of his panel that was reviewing the NSA situation, one of the things that has been left for future determination and that Obama indicated would probably be the case is to have a third party storing the various metadata. and that might be the phone companies, it might be somebody else. A lot of people have not noted that, but some have, and I am going to note it in a big way here, that frankly, that is not good. I have no illusions about the NSA, and again, for would-be critics, I've been talking about this intermittently since the 1990s. One might think that if this was really such a great, big upset to people, I certainly don't think the world revolves around Dave Emery. I'm not suffering from delusions of grandeur, but this information has been on the air in Los Angeles and New York and the Silicon Valley and has been on the Internet, archived on the Internet. You might think that all of these people who are feeling so terribly upset and so terribly violated might, I mean, they just might have taken note of this before. Mussolini, the inventor of the term fascism and the first fascist governor, the first fascist dictator, he didn't say that, well, fascism is when the NSA is harvesting up your Internet communications and your phone calls. No, Mussolini noted that, quote, he defined fascism as the corporate state. And he said that, quote, il fascismo e il corporatismo. Fascism is corporatism. And we are going to be taking a look at corporatism and how it relates to the whole issue of personal privacy, because people are missing the boat. A very telling article that I was just very, very happy to see appeared as an op-ed piece in the New York Times of January 18th of 2014. This is an article by James Rosen, R-O-G-E-N, called Madison's Privacy Blind Spot, referring, of course, to former President James Madison. This is this reads in part, expect to hear a lot more about Madison in the coming year as the issues surrounding the NSA move toward what Justice Antonin Scalia has said will be a likely review by the Supreme Court. For that reason, it is important to explore what Madison does and doesn't offer to this debate. The apotheosis of Madison is as an emblem for opposition to mass surveillance is welcome. But the reasoning behind his beliefs has been misunderstood. Madison believed that the preservation of people's different and unequal faculties of acquiring property, unquote, was the first object of government, again quoting, but a too powerful government could undermine that goal. He was, therefore, more concerned with abuses of legislative and executive power than of unregulated commercial power. As a result, the Bill of Rights, which he came to champion, constrains only government actors, not private ones. It applies to the government, not Google. Now that Google and AT&T can track us more closely than any NSA agent, it appears that the Madisonian Constitution may be inadequate to defend our privacy and dignity in the 21st century. There is, therefore, a tension in modern libertarian appreciations of Madison. They exaggerate his opposition to abuse of federal power and ignore his failure to anticipate abuse of corporate power. But on the right, the Madisonian devotees of property rights and Jeffersonian suspicion of regulation are so strong that the same principal libertarians who oppose NSA data collection shrink from efforts to regulate Google or AT&T. I would add all of these other tech companies, eBay, which owns PayPal, Facebook, Palantir, Amazon, which we're going to be using drones if they get FAA approval to be delivering their product. Oh, yes, I almost forgot. Amazon is also going to be storing some of the CIA's computer information as well. Continuing, in his speech on intelligence reform on Friday, President Obama called on Attorney General Eric H. Holder, Jr. to develop options for how the bulk telephone data collection program could continue without the metadata being held by the government itself. But telecom companies have resisted being the repository for the data, and an anti-regulatory Congress is unlikely to require them to do so or to impose meaningful limits on what they can do with the data that they hold. As a result, Internet service providers and telecoms are constrained neither by the Constitution nor in meaningful ways by federal privacy statutes, and they are free to engage in just the kind of intrusive surveillance that Judge Leon insisted was an unreasonable search and seizure when conducted by the NSA. In practice, the neo-Madisonian distinction between surveillance by the government and surveillance by Google makes very little sense. It is true that, as Judge Pauly concluded, quote, people voluntarily surrender personal and seemingly private information to transnational corporations which exploit that data for profit. Few think twice about it, unquote. But why? Why is it okay for AT&T to know about our political, religious, and sexual associations, but not the government, skipping down? That distinction is unconvincing. Once data is collected by private parties, the government will inevitably demand access. More fundamentally, continuously tracking my location, whether by the government or AT&T, is an affront to my dignity. When every step I take on and offline is recorded, so an algorithm can predict if I am a potential terrorist or a potential customer, I am being objectified and stereotyped rather than treated as an individual worthy of equal concern and respect. Skipping down. What Americans may need now is a constitutional amendment to prohibit unreasonable searches and seizures of our persons and electronic effects, whether by the government or by private corporations like Google and AT&T. Perhaps even Madison, who unsuccessfully proposed a preamble to the Constitution declaring, quote, that all power is originally vested in and consequently derived from the people, unquote, and that all people have basic natural rights, including, quote, the enjoyment of life and liberty, unquote, and the right of, quote, pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety, unquote, might have realized that our rights to enjoy liberty and to obtain happiness and safety at the same time are threatened as much by corporate as by government surveillance. I would submit they are far more threatened by corporate surveillance. I will note quickly in passing that the major internet companies, and now with the advent of smartphones, the cell phone companies and the internet, these technologies are becoming one. I would submit that your privacy is far more threatened and your liberties are far more threatened by the corporations. They collect your personal data as a matter of course, and whereas NSA is interested in certain things and has to at least nominally go through a court process, the corporations have no legal oversight whatsoever, and they are absolutely out front about the fact that your personal data gleaned from your cell phone calls, from your internet habits, are a major capital asset for the internet companies. They are very out front about that. I again will note in passing, the NSA, frankly, is not, and intelligence matters are something I know something about, okay? The NSA is a military agency. They are not interested in whether you break wind in your cubicle at work. On the other hand, others just might be. Let's go with that slightly scatological example. Suppose, for the sake of argument, that someone was in the habit of breaking wind in their cubicle at work, whether because they had a Jones for chili, or because of some physiological disorder, or simply because they were manifesting a kingly disregard for the sensibilities of others. Again, the NSA does not care, but all that would have to happen would be for a coworker to post that information on Facebook, saying so-and-so is always breaking wind in their cubicle at work. I think it's disgusting. And somebody else would then go, yeah, you know, I think the same thing. I've smelled that, and it's just awful, and I wish they'd quit. And others would chime in. And at that point, you are off to the races. I would note that many employers now actually check Facebook for potential hirees. And something like that could very easily lead to you not getting hired for a job. I would also note that something like that could, if in fact the Affordable Care Act gets repealed and pre-existing conditions might again be grounds for denying someone health insurance. That information could conceivably go against you in the future. Retail outlets, when you get a discount card at a pharmacy or at a supermarket, every purchase you make is databased, and that is shared with other corporations. And if, in fact, you do have some potential disorder, and if someone goes on their Facebook account and says, you know, I really wish so-and-so would stop breaking wind in their cubicle at work, it's disgusting, that could lead to an insurance company denying you health insurance at some point in the future. Think about that. Now, moving on. And for the record, program number 732, we were examining the Pirate Bay outfit. That is an outfit that was based in Sweden and whose PRQ servers, financed by Swedish fascist Carl Lundstrom, were used by WikiLeaks. And in, for the record, 732, we noted a piece of information in a Guardian article. That's the British Guardian of February 26th, 2009. This is an article by Andrew Brown, and it's headlined, "The Pirate Bay Trial is the Collision of Can I and Should I?" And we note the following. "Their attitude of sneering and entitlement towards the government is all of a piece with their attitude towards the big content companies. I know that a little bit of the rhetoric surrounding the Pirate Bay sounds left-wing, the idea that it is wrong for, quote, international capital, unquote, to push Sweden around, but that's just populist and could be found in the rhetoric of the kind of parties that Carl Lundstrom has supported, too. The overwhelming impression is of a clash between two right-wing views, one that says it is all right to steal from the state, and one which says it is sinful to steal from corporations. The corporatist dynamic," again, Mussolini said, "il fascismo e il corporatismo." Fascism is corporatism. And Ronald Reagan made that something of his political war cry decades ago. He said, government isn't the solution to your problems. Government is the problem. And I want to note that in many ways the Reagan dictum is front and center in the arguments being advanced by the supporters of Eddie the Friendly Spook, the peach fuzz fascist. And we're going to be taking a look at the institutions that people have, frankly, willingly, enthusiastically embraced as the violators of their own privacy. We're going to take a look at a short excerpt here from an article in Rolling Stone magazine of December 1st of 2010. This is an article by Nathaniel Rich, R-I-C-H. It's called "The American WikiLeaks Hacker." It's about Jacob Applebaum, again, a WikiLeaks hacker, currently resident, by the way, in Germany, along with most of the other principals in this drama. Applebaum had some very interesting observations here, and we're going to come back to Applebaum in future weeks. Applebaum is quoted here in the article, skipping down. "It's not just the state," says Applebaum. "If it wanted to, Google could overthrow any country in the world. Google has enough dirt to destroy every marriage in America," unquote. Skipping down. "And I love the people there. Sergey Brin and Larry Page are cool. But I'm terrified of the next generation that takes over." a benevolent dictatorship is still a dictatorship. At some point, people are going to realize that Google has everything on everyone. Most of all, they can see what questions you're asking in real time. Quite literally, they can read your mind, unquote. Well, keep that in mind. We're going to take a look at an aspect of Google right now from PR Watch of November 27th, 2013, an article by Nick Surgey, S-U-R-G-E-Y, titled, "The Googleization of the Far Right. Why is Google funding Grover Norquist, Heritage Action, and ALEC?" ALEC, by the way, is capital A, as A-L-E-C, all in capitals. Excerpting, "Google, the tech giant supposedly guided by its 'Don't Be Evil' motto, has been funding a growing list of groups advancing the agenda of the Koch brothers. Organizations that received substantial, unquote, funding from Google for the first time over the past year include Grover Norquist's Americans for Tax Reform, the Federalist Society, the American Conservative Union, best known for its CPAC conference, and the political arm of the Heritage Foundation that led the charge to shut down the government over the Affordable Care Act. More than any other group, Heritage Action was working to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Heritage Action pushed for a sustained government shutdown in the fall of 2013, taking the country to the brink of a potentially catastrophic debt default. Laying the ground for that strategy, Heritage Action held a nine-city defund Obamacare town hall tour in August of 2013, providing a platform for Texas Senator Ted Cruz to address crowds of cheering Tea Party supporters. For Cruz, increasingly spoken of as a 2016 presidential candidate, the government shutdown helped raise his profile and build his supporter and donor base. Notably, Heritage Action received $500,000 from the Koch-funded and Koch-operated staffed Freedom Partners in 2012. It is not yet known how much Heritage Action received in 2013 from sources other than Google. Perhaps surprisingly, Google has a history of supporting Cruz. Via its Political Action Committee, Google Incorporated, NetPAC, the PAC provided the Ted Cruz for Senate campaign with a $10,000 contribution in 2012. And we're going to be continuing with this particular article in side two of the program. Again, I have noted that every For the Record program has a long article-length description on the SpitfireList.com website. For the Record is something of a hybrid media presentation. It is part radio and part print, and I can't encourage listeners strongly enough to use the descriptions. If some of the things that I say might seem a little bit far out, please check out the documentation, because I have already written the equivalent of a small book about this subject. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 774, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, part 14, The Corporate Connections and the Public versus Private Dynamic. This is being recorded on February 16th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.